This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Mary Ellen Gilpin from the local Friends meeting, sometimes called Quakers. Welcome, Mary Ellen.
Welcome.
Good to have you here. And I should let listeners know we're also joined in the studio, which is very appropriate for a Quaker meeting-style broadcast, with someone who's may remain silent the whole time. And that's Charlotte Green. Welcome, Charlotte.
Good to have you here.
Mary Ellen, we're talking about mysticism today, and we're using as a way to get into that topic some real-life stories that you've collected over several years. Now, how did you get involved in this newsletter project about mysticism as one of the editors?
Well, it all happened because a member of my meeting once read a clipping to a group of us, and I really liked the clipping, and I asked her if I could have a copy, and she did better than that. She gave me the entire page that the clipping was on, which included the beginning of an article, the end of an article, the one I was interested in, and a subscription blank. And by the time I had read all that, I was hooked. I wanted to subscribe. And the first issue that came, was just very meaningful to me. And in the body of the issue, there was a request that people offer to help out. It was entirely a volunteer operation. And they needed people who could do things like printing and mailing and proofreading. And I thought, well, I don't know anything but academic publication, but goodness, I could probably proofread for them. Well, while I was writing the email, I started noodling, you could say, various topics that we might do an issue on, one of which absolutely scared me to pieces, but I still thought it was a good topic, and that was wholeness in the midst of brokenness. And so I sent this email, and shortly I got a phone call saying, would you be lead editor for an issue on wholeness in the midst of brokenness? I told her I don't know anything about newsletters. So she said, we'll teach you. And by the time I had learned absolutely everything the hard way on that first issue, I was hooked. I wanted to do this again and again. It is just so exciting to be the first person to read these wonderful stories as they come in.
Now, this is a newsletter that comes out of Pennsylvania, sort of the center of Quakerism in this country. And it's a newsletter that's now published quarterly, but when you began being involved, was it published like monthly or six times a year?
Times a year.
Okay, and it's called What Canst Thou Say?
Yes.
Now, why the old English, the older English?
Right. It comes from George Fox, who was the most outspoken person who was involved in early Quakerism.
18th century?
16th.
Oh, was it?
17th century.
Really? Okay.
I get this confused.
Okay.
At about 1640.
Okay, 17th century then, yes.
Yeah.
In England then?
Yes, he challenged people to listen to their own hearts. He said, thou hast said, Christ saith this, and the apostles say that, but what canst thou say?
So this is the language from, for example, the King James Bible, early 17th century.
Mm-hmm.
And Quakers have used these and thous as a way to address one another at least some of the time. Is that still done?
Occasionally. It isn't as frequent anymore.
Uh-huh.
And many of us who come from other faiths into Quakerism don't have that culture. And we use use you.
Sure.
Most frequently.
All right. But here's this newsletter with that interesting title, What Canst Thou Say? And it's each time it's a one story or several stories?
Usually half a dozen, 6 to 8 stories in each issue. They all concern people's experience of God's presence and power in their lives. And it's just so moving to read the various ways in which God speaks to people. That's one of the things I was trying to accomplish in this book, was to give some of the range of the different ways in which God speaks, through voices, through an experience of bliss, visions. There's a whole range of things, and we try to give a selection.
And also, surprisingly, even in experiences of pain.
Yes.
And we want to talk about that later. Let me give the title of your book. It came out just this year. It's called Discovering God as Companion, Real Life Stories from What Canst Thou Say? And again, our guest is Mary Ellen Gilpin. That's spelled G-I-L-P-I-N. And listeners who'd like to get a copy of this, there'll be a book signing at Pages for All Ages coming up in February on the Saturday the 2nd. But in the meantime, is it available there already at Pages, do you know? Copies
not
of your book?
Not yet. It can be ordered from the publishing house. There's a 800 number.
Yes. Why don't you give us that number?
888-280-7715.
And it's also available online. People can go to discoveringgodascompanion.com to order a copy of this book. Let's talk a little bit about the subject of mysticism to start with. And maybe we should say a little bit more about the Friends. When you talk about a meeting, that's what other people might call a church.
Mm-hmm.
And when you gather for worship, there's not clergy. Everyone is what in other denominations or movements might be called a layperson. And people speak as they are moved to speak, moved by the Spirit.
Yes, we worship in silence. And worshiping in silence gives God a chance to get a word in edgewise. And amazing things happen when you undertake to worship in silence.
I found it interesting in the afterword of your book, you gave in the appendix on who are the Friends or the Quakers, you gave an example of someone's first visit to a Friends meeting. And this person recounts that there was silence, and she felt, I think, a little nervous waiting for the first person to actually speak. And when someone spoke, it was very brief, and I'll read this. This man said, "I have learned that prayer and scientific experiments are the same in method, if not in concept." And then he sat down. And this person's response to that was, "I grappled with the speaker's few words in ways that never happened during typical sermons. In the silence, I thought, if prayer is like a scientific experiment, that means we're supposed to try things when we pray and observe the results. It means we make mistakes. But it's okay to make mistakes if we learn from them. Are we supposed to form hypotheses about how to pray and then pray that way and see what happens? Does that mean there's no right way to pray?" Then someone shook hands and worship was over. Now, is that typical, that maybe only one person would speak during a whole hour-long Friends meeting?
There may be only one speaker, and there may be no speakers at all. Huh. And often those very totally silent meetings are the best of all.
Really?
Each meeting is totally different, depending on what you bring with you. we say, come with hearts and minds prepared for worship.
I see. Now, when we came into the studio this afternoon, and Charlotte reintroduced herself to me, and she said, I'm just going to sit silently and not be, probably not even be part of the conversation. You said, well, she will be holding me in the light. What does that mean? What does that phrase mean?
It's a Quaker way of saying, I'm going to pray for you.
Ah.
It's a way of saying, I don't know what God really wants in this situation, so I'm going to just hold you in the light and let God do the work. I won't make any prescriptions on what God will do.
Let me reintroduce our speaking guest so far in the program, Mary Ellen Gilpin, who's the author of Discovering God as Companion. And let me encourage listeners to join this conversation if you choose. If you're moved by the Spirit, do give us a phone call. And the number here in the studio is 333-9455 if you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area. If it's a long-distance call, perhaps you're listening even on the Internet, do call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And I see while I was talking, we have a caller already on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Alan Majors. I'm calling from Effingham, and I have a question for the guest today.
Sure.
I was wondering if Mary Ellen might be able to elaborate on what Quakerism affords that's unique or different from other expressions of faith.
What's unique or different about the Friends?
I would say that the most unique difference is the emphasis on the individual's own experience of God. We encourage Friends to not make any declarations that they don't fully agree with. We don't have a creed, for instance. And we expect people to live up to the light thou hast.
So when you say there's no creed, there's no sort of statement of beliefs that everybody has to agree to be part of the Quaker meeting.
Right.
You accept people where they are, as they are, and let them speak or stay silent as they choose.
Yes, and the silence works many big differences in people's lives over the course of a few years in a Quaker meeting. It's a faith that believes in the process of living a Spirit-led life.
Alan, would you like to say anything else about that?
I might ask why the Quakers seem to have very little emphasis on any kind of symbolism.
Symbolism?
Yes.
That grows out of the period in which the faith grew up. In 16th century England, 16th and 17th century England, there was a lot of form and fol-de-rol and standing up and sitting down and images on the wall. And the Quakers just believed that the simpler the situation they were in, the easier it would be for them to hear God.
So what might the Quakers respond to those expressions of faith who might say, hold dearly to sprinkling or water immersion baptism?
I think that Quakers would say, if it works for you, that's fine. Don't expect me to do it.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your call. So the Quakers, although they would describe themselves typically in the Christian tradition, would not use what some Christians refer to as a sacrament of baptism.
We say that Quakers have no sacraments, but marriage and maybe potluck.
Potluck dinners, yes. Always good food at the Quaker meeting house. Let's talk a little bit about one of the themes raised by the last caller. When Alan asked about the little interest in symbolism, Quakers are known for simplicity of life, mm-hmm. as well as their meeting houses being of a very plain architecture. Why is there that choice for a simple life, an avoidance of luxuries and things like that?
It's, once again, it's an attempt to get one's life oriented toward God rather than toward things and toward activities.
Okay. We have another caller, this time on line number 2. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Good evening. My name is Carrie. I'm calling from Champaign, and I would like to thank you for having Mary Ellen Gilpin sure. on Acting on Faith. It's I've purchased a copy of the book, and I've really enjoyed reading excerpts from it, and I appreciate Mary Ellen's work with this as editor. And I have a question. I was wondering how she prepared herself for reading the excerpts, the stories, and how the selection process was made, if there was any sort of centering or holding people in the light as she read the stories.
It's not clear to me. When I read the stories originally when they came to me?
Yes.
Oh, I was just so excited. I just assumed that whatever the story was going to be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I found the stories themselves very centering, very encouraging to the spiritual life.
But here you had 10 years of this journal to pick sort of the best from. How do you decide how to get this particular mix in your book, A God as Companion?
Well, I started by reading all 10 years' worth of issues and just making notes of the stories that particularly spoke to me.
Okay.
And then out of that list, on both sides of a sheet of paper acquired over the summer, I began to think of themes that would unite stories across several issues. And so there are themes like God breaking in, God in nature, God in times of pain and despair,
living faithfully, and in celebration.
Yes.
Caller, did you have yes. have a follow-up you want to ask?
Thank you for sharing. It's wonderful to read the different stories. They all have a different impact on my life. And
were there any particular ones that stood out to you, Carrie?
Well, I know several of the authors, so those are always very interesting interesting to read. So I was just curious about the selection process.
And you're a Quaker yourself?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Why don't we give listeners who've not had a chance to see the book a little flavor of what some of these descriptions of mystical experiences are like. You were telling me you had selected one to read in sort of each half of the program, and the first one you selected is called Depression is a Gift, and that comes in the section of your book on discovering God in times of pain and despair. And tell us a little bit about who the author of this is, Dmitri Mihalis?
Yes. Some of you may remember Dmitri. He was a member of this community in the early 90s. And
now he's in Boulder, I see, in Colorado at the Friends meeting there.
Yes.
Well, why don't you read to us this, Depression is a Gift.
I slipped into a major depression in September of 1985. By December, I'd dropped very suddenly into a suicidal state. In early January 1986, I went home one afternoon to pull the trigger. But my wife had already removed the gun from the house, and my plan was thwarted. being incapacitated to the point I could not immediately come up with another plan, I was stuck, and I simply stumbled forward as well as I could. Somewhere during the end of January or early February, my wife and I had lunch near campus. In walking back, we parted company to go to our respective offices. It was snowing moderately. I went along for a few steps and on impulse turned around to look at her going away. As she moved further along her path, I watched her slowly disappear into the falling snow. First her white knit cap, then her parka, then gone. In an instant, I felt a tremendous pang of loneliness, a tremendous sense of loss and emptiness, as I found myself asking, what would happen if she suddenly disappeared? How could I stand it? How would I survive? Then a very short time later, I understood that those terrible questions would be hers if I were to kill myself. I felt like I had been hit with both barrels of a shotgun. What I eventually came up with is that my life isn't really mine. It belongs to me, sure, but in the context of all the other lives it touches, and that when all the chips are down on the table, I don't have the moral and ethical right to destroy my life because of the impact that would have on all the people who know and love me. Killing myself implies killing part of them. I could understand very clearly that I did not want any of the people I love killing themselves. By reciprocity, I realized they would say the same of me, and at that moment I recognized the only morally and ethically acceptable path open to me was to hang on as long as I possibly could. Sometime later, I no longer know exactly when, I experienced a delayed reaction to the event described above. While part of my mind was still bent on suicide and had to be resisted, in another part of my mind, I felt an increasingly strong conviction that I was being protected, sheltered, that it would all come out all right. It helped to quiet my worst fears. It offered the faintest breath of hope, even though my depression was as severe as ever. I felt that I had been touched. I can't say for sure it was God who touched me, though that seems a valid metaphor for the experience. But I know for certain that it was a force of tremendous power and that the merest touch of it is enough to last a lifetime. A few years later in the Boulder meeting, I was thinking back to those times and the pure hell I went through then, how painful it was, how crushing and frightening. I found myself asking, was that a test? Was it a punishment? Was it a trial? And then I remembered that it was then that I first felt touched, felt guided, held, carried, protected, even in the deepest, darkest places. So I had to conclude it simply couldn't be a test or punishment. That wouldn't make sense. So I ask again, why is it given for us to have to travel through such terrible darkness? Suddenly, I knew the answer. It is a child's answer, so obvious that only a child might ever think of it. It is this. It is in the deepest darkness that one can most easily see light, God's light, your inner light. As an astronomer, let me say something else obvious. If you want to see stars, you don't go out at noon. You go out at midnight. And the darker it is then, the more and fainter stars you can see. The picture I got is that in our lives, our inner light may get obscured, covered over by all kinds of things, such as pride, anger, arrogance, greed, betrayal, false belief, illness, pain, on and on. Eventually, there comes the day when we can't see it anymore. Then we are lost, yet only we can find ourselves again. But then if we are plunged into great darkness, we have a chance to find that light again, no matter how faint it might have become. So I was led to the amazing conclusion that the dark journey is not a test, a trial, or a punishment. It is a gift.
Read by Mary Ellen Gilpin, Depression is a Gift, written by Dimitri Mihalis and collected in Mary Ellen's book, Discovering God as Companion, and read over the air by permission of the editor, who was our reader, as well as Author House, the publisher. Thank you, Mary Ellen. And I want to respond to that a bit, but we have a caller who may have some comments. Yes, line number one, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes.
Okay. Mary Ellen, this is Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi, and I'm happy to hear that I've been quoted about the sacraments.
Right.
So I, in turn, am going to quote you. Quakerism is a do-it-yourself religion, for the gentleman who called in before Carrie. And I also wanted to say for him, this is sort of in answer to his question, I have a couple of things. I've heard Quakerism described as the logical conclusion to the Reformation. It took the Reformation one step further and didn't just say that parishioners could talk to God. They didn't need an intermediary. We just did away with all the intermediaries. So everything is direct. And also it's a living religion in that, this book is an example that people's direct experience that God didn't stop walking on the earth when Jesus died 2,000 years ago. God, and some feel that it's Jesus. I'm more of a Unitary than a Trinitarian. But God works
directly in our lives. And in Quakerism, there's room for both, I think.
What?
And in Quakerism, there's room for both.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That the deity, however you want to personify it, continues to work among humans, and it didn't stop when the Bible stopped being written. So it's a very live religion, and it is do-it-yourself because nobody comes and entertains you on Sunday morning. You get out of it in great part what you bring to it. And we don't have a creed, but what we do have is organization. And there were many, many religions that grew up out of the great upheaval of mid-17th century, 1650s. I believe the only one that still exists today is the Quakers. And the reason for that is the structure we have that goes beyond the local meeting. There's a regional meeting, and then there's a bigger organization, but I won't go into all the technicalities, but I believe that structure is what has allowed Quakers to exist into the 21st century. So I'm really enjoying the show, and I haven't read the book yet, but now I'm thinking, gee, I'd go out and get a copy.
Well, thank you for contributing. Appreciate your comments.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. We're about halfway through our discussion today of mysticism with Mary Ellen Gilpin and with Charlotte Green, also in the studio from the Friends meeting, who may make a comment later on. We'll see. We've been talking a little bit about discovering God as companion, a collection of individual stories. Mary Ellen has served as a volunteer editor for a newsletter that comes out now four times a year with six or seven or eight of these stories from Quakers and others all around the country, and has now collected the ones that moved her the most, and to fit in with certain categories of thought in a book which just was published this year and is available for people who would like to read it, Discovering God as Companion, Real Life Stories from this newsletter called What Canst Thou Say? Mary Ellen will be having a book signing at Pages for All Ages on Saturday, February 2nd. please look for the time as we get closer to that date. Keeping the Faith is a program that every week discusses areas of religion, spirituality, ethics, values. It's sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director for about 7 or 8 more months. I'll be retiring next August, and so if any listeners know someone who would be good in this position, do give the search committee at the Y a call with a suggestion, or have someone who you know who might be a good director of a campus YMCA to check with the Y. The number there is 217-337-1500, 1500. Also sponsoring Keeping the Faith this time of year is the Ridge Road Tree Farm, which is a place where you can go and buy Christmas trees. Cut them yourself. They're quite fresh. You'll see about 2,000 of them available for cutting this year, 3 miles south of Urbana. RidgeRoadTreeFarm.com will give you information and directions, or you can give them a call at 217-684-2535. Ridge Road Tree Farm, about a mile off of 130, about 3 miles south of Urbana on the way to Philo. Well, coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking about Islam. And we have two guests, Hatim Rahman and Ahmed Sharif, from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center in Urbana on Lincoln Avenue. Their topic is Dispelling the Myths of the Clash of Civilizations. That will be December 2nd here on Keeping the Faith, 5 o'clock Central Time. December 9, we have representatives from the Newman Center on the University of Illinois campus, a group called Focus. And Emily Malloy and some other students will be here talking about their activities as Roman Catholics on this huge University of Illinois campus. December 16, Vernon Burton will be our guest, who's the author of the acclaimed new book on Abraham Lincoln, The Age of Lincoln, just out this year. Those are some of the programs coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Well, let's get back to our discussion about mysticism with Mary Ellen Gilpin. I see we have another caller waiting on line number one. Go ahead, please. Line one.
My name is Lisa, and yeah. The reason I was calling in, Mary Ellen, I just had a question about the quiet worship. I think what I wanted to ask you is, how do people make the adjustment from, like, if they switch from a regular worship service to the quiet service? How are they able to, what is helpful for people to really tune in the quiet worship, do you think?
I think Quakers have different approaches to dealing with silent worship, especially in the beginning. One of the techniques that I have found most helpful over the longest period of time is to have a single prayer word that I say over and over, especially at the beginning of worship. And as I center down and get into a different space, that word just goes away naturally, and sometimes I'm there totally in silence the whole time, and sometimes that's the best time of all.
Yes.
Yes.
Charlotte's going to join us.
I've been a Quaker have been attending Quaker meetings since 2002 and recently became a member, but I remember one thing that really helped me in the beginning when I first started coming was that we had a study group. And we met at someone's home, and it was a small group, so we had an opportunity to share what people were doing in the silence, and that was very helpful to me. And I think also what we were talking about earlier, that in a way it's an experiment, and that there's no real wrong way with what you're doing in the silence, because it can be kind of intimidating. You know, not having instructions.
Sure. Lisa, on the phone, let me ask you, have you attended ever a Quaker meeting?
I have, and I've kind of struggled because on one hand I like the quiet worship, but sometimes I have, you know, different things come up. Sometimes it's kind of painful being in the silence.
Uh-huh.
It's not like where you have a sermon or music that you feel joyful.
Sure.
Different things can pop up in your mind, and it's much different. And I mean, it can be very grounding, but then other times I'm not, you know, sure how I'm really dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
I think the thing to do when you have something painful come up in the silence is just give it to God there in the silence and look at it again. And often in my experience, if you just hold it in God's light, you'll see it in a different way.
Mm. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Let me ask a skeptical question. Our callers so far have been friendly, but let me be the skeptic here. Surely people who attend a Quaker meeting know, gee, there's going to be a whole hour. I just read this fascinating book. I've been thinking about this all week. I'm going to think a little bit about a way to share this wonderful insight that I've learned. And isn't that a little bit like a minister preparing a sermon?
Well, we sort of point out to the person that that's what they've done. this is not a chance to express our own ideas and our own opinions. This is a chance to look at our lives and our experiences through a different lens. And I would say that what I'm trying to do is look at it through God's eyes. It's a longer range perspective. In my experience, it's often a more objective perspective than I would have if I were to simply opinionate.
Okay. Well, let me be a little mean then.
And
this may come from my being a Presbyterian minister, you know, having gone to seminary and all this stuff.
Okay, but, go for it.
But do Quakers honestly think that God speaks more only through spontaneity and not through planning, not through study, not through scholarship?
I think God sends some of us to graduate school, too.
Okay. But so that can be okay, but not the Quaker's choice. There's something about spontaneity that Quakers feel is more authentic, perhaps?
I don't know that spontaneity is exactly the word that I would use for it.
Okay.
And maybe Charlotte can help me with this. I think we're trying to look at our own experience.
Okay.
And sometimes book learning helps us, is part of our experience, but often it's that moment when the driver cut us off in traffic that we really need to be thinking and reflecting on and coming to a different view of.
Okay. Now in these experiences from real life that you've collected in this book, Discovering God as Companion, people have talked about these kind of mystical experiences where God seems very present. And you have a fascinating section in this book at the end, in your afterword, where you talk about the problem of how to distinguish whether it was God that was actually speaking or just the person's imagination or dreams or who knows what. Let's talk a little bit about that from your experience. And you have two articles in this collection that you wrote that were in the newsletter at different times. And let's talk a little bit about the first one. Then I'm going to ask you to read, if there's time, the second one.
Right.
But the first one, you talk about some of your experiences with mental illness. Let's tell me how that came about and how you were willing to be brave enough to write about it.
How am I brave enough to write about it? Because I think the sooner we get rid of the stigma of mental illness, the better. It's important, I think, to realize that just because one is mentally ill doesn't mean that one doesn't have gifts that God needs in God's service.
Sure. Now, when you talked in this first article, it's a fascinating article, a bit too long for us to read, unfortunately, but you talk about how prayer, which is so important to the friends, was something that threw you into hallucinations, and
right.
that you had to give it up.
Uh-huh.
And you felt that God actually spoke to you and said, stop praying. And you thought maybe a year, but you felt convinced that God wanted you to stop for 5 years so that
yes.
it wouldn't lead to those kind of hallucinations that were so difficult in spite of the fact you were seeing a psychiatrist and taking medication and all of that.
Yeah. Yes. I loved praying, and at the same time, it had become a vehicle for mental illness.
Uh-huh.
And when I said to God, well, I'll give it up for a year in order to heal, the answer that came was 5 years, and that was so horrid to consider that I knew it wasn't my idea.
Yeah. Although you had some people in a Bible study you were involved in, I take it not a Quaker one, although it might have been, who said, no, to not pray is a sin. You mm-hmm. have to pray. But mm-hmm. you felt that God told you not to.
Yes, and I looked at this experience with the Bible study group was about a year after I took the pledge, shall uh-huh. we say, and stopped praying. And so at first I was very upset that they thought I might be sinning because I was mentally ill. Maybe I
sure.
was wrong.
Sure.
Maybe I had made a mistake and didn't understand. But I thought about it and realized that in that year of not praying, I had become spiritually much stronger. I had a sense of God's presence all the time. I didn't have to pray to get that sense of God's presence. And so I developed the idea that you can tell the tree by its fruits, that the fruits of my spiritual experience were that I was stronger, wiser, and more loving.
Uh-huh.
And Jesus also said that a house divided against itself cannot stand, and I realized that if there were a devil, and I wasn't sure about that, but if there were, he wouldn't be making me spiritually stronger in order to finish me off in the end. And so I gathered my courage and believed in my own experience and kept up the experience of not praying for a total of actually six years,
you said, yeah.
And I certainly don't fault God for not being able to count that it was not 5 years but six. I think I just had a lot of growing that I had to do before I could have prayer restored to me.
We're talking with Mary Ellen Gilpin, who's the editor of Discovering God as Companion, published just this year, and available from the publisher. You can find it several different ways. One is by going online to discoveringgodascompanion.com or by calling 1-888-280-7715, which is a toll-free number. The toll-free number here in the studio, if you'd like to talk to Mary Ellen and our other guest, Charlotte Green, while this program is going on, is 1-800-222-9455, and Champaign-Urbana, the local number is 333-9455. Mary Ellen, let's try to slip in at least part of your second article on it's in the celebration part of this book, A Time of Celebration. Tell us a little, read it a little bit at least about Ralph Hall.
My uncle Ralph Hall was a Presbyterian missionary to the cowboys of the Southwest. When he rode into a group of cowboys, he simply asked if they needed an extra hand. They always did, and for a few days he worked as hard as any of them. Cowboys lived and worked under brutalizing conditions and were a hard-bitten lot. They frequently gave my uncle the meanest horse in the outfit to ride, and after he'd been bucked out of the saddle, he'd climb back on the horse and ride it the rest of the shift. The horse's shift, that is. Cowboys didn't have shifts. Then one evening he'd go to the foreman and explain he was a minister and would like to speak to the boys after supper. By that time, the cowboys respected Uncle Ralph as a man, and many lives were changed as a result of his ministry. I grew up in Indiana and didn't meet Uncle Ralph until I was in college. My father was dying of cancer, and my aunt and uncle came from New Mexico on the train to help out during the last few weeks of my father's illness. I was very angry with my father, who was a compulsive gambler and had no medical insurance. I was also angry with my mother, who had kept my father in spite of his profligacy. I dropped out of college in order to help out with the farm chores and provide some financial support to my parents. I got a job in a men's prison. But when my father hadn't conveniently died before the start of the fall semester, I went back to college anyway. It was time to get on with my life. I was feeling singularly unlovely when Uncle Ralph walked into my life. The first weekend after my aunt and uncle arrived, I drove home from college to meet them. When I arrived, Uncle Ralph was doing the chores, so I changed into my barn clothes and went to see if I could help. Uncle Ralph was in the hog barn when I found him. I saw him before he saw me. He was squatting to shell an ear of corn for some baby pigs to eat. I looked at the piggies. They were thriving on the corn and also on the attention of the man who was feeding them. They knew Uncle Ralph liked them. I knew from my aunt that Uncle Ralph had never worked with pigs before, and I smiled at the incongruity of the cowboy boots and 10-gallon hat in an Indiana pigsty. I liked pigs, and I liked this man who wasn't too proud of being a cowboy to like them, too. Then I spoke, and Uncle Ralph looked up. He looked at me with love and joy, and I knew this man walked his talk. He was an authentic Christian. All through the last days of my father's life, I watched Uncle Ralph and the atmosphere of love and joy that surrounded him. I wondered what he had. After we buried my father, I never saw my uncle and aunt again. I didn't write to them often as I got married, became a Quaker, went to graduate school, and got a job. But I drew comfort knowing that Uncle Ralph was somewhere on this green planet with me. Then Uncle Ralph died. I was again in a difficult time. My marriage was on hard times, and I had been let go from my job. I was unsure of my career direction and had no job prospects. Again, I was feeling unlovely. And now Uncle Ralph, who had been an anchor, was gone. I was short of cash. It was one out of the question to travel halfway across the continent for his funeral. I decided to dedicate the next Sunday's worship to him. I would have my own private memorial meeting for worship. When I mentioned to God that meeting for worship was for Uncle Ralph, I expected to cry. Suddenly there was a clear message, "And be assured, I am with you always." I realized Uncle Ralph wanted me to know he was quoting Jesus, and he also was speaking for himself. And there was that same atmosphere of love and joy I knew from the old days. I was deeply comforted. A few weeks later, my cousin wrote that Uncle Ralph had left instructions. His funeral service was to be a celebration. And Uncle Ralph made sure my memorial meeting for worship, too, was a time of celebration. I am deeply comforted.
A reading by Mary Ellen Gilpin, from a book that she's edited, in her own words, one of her own experiences, mystical experiences. The book is called Discovering God as Companion. read on the radio by permission of the author, editor, reader, and the publisher, Author House, in Bloomington, Indiana. Listeners who'd like a copy of the book may call 1-888-280-7715 or check out discoveringgodascompanion.com. Mary Ellen will be having a book signing at Pages for All Ages in Champaign on February 2nd, a Saturday. Thank you for reading, Mary Ellen. Let's talk a little bit about this experience. Why was this a mystical experience?
Because I knew through other senses besides speech, hearing, touch, taste. I knew through a spiritual sense.
Now, you mentioned graduate school. What did you study in grad school?
I have a master's degree in linguistics and a master of arts in the teaching of English.
And when you go to graduate school in this country, you study how to be a researcher and how to look at all this data and make sense of it and how to write and express yourself, which you obviously do very well. But how do you analyze a spiritual experience? In your afterword, you talk a little bit about this, and I found it very helpful. But what are some of the signs that an experience is actually some connection with the divine, in your Quaker perspective?
I think you have to look at the fruits. It's, again, you can tell the tree by its fruits. If 6 weeks later you look back and realize that you become stronger, wiser, more loving, in your day-to-day grappling with reality, more than likely it was a spiritual experience of God's presence.
You also mentioned the importance of getting feedback from others. Now, in the earlier example, you found that feedback not helpful, but I take it in many cases it is helpful. The people like Charlotte, who's with us, and others say something affirming.
I developed some methods based on a Christian secret of a happy life, which is been reprinted a zillion times. I think it was originally written in 1879, something like that, by a Quaker named Hannah Whitall Smith, who had several guidelines for how to tell whether an idea was coming from God or not. She said you can check with reality. Does it make sense? Does it make sense in comparison with your common sense about
Sure.
the experience? And if you think that you have some sense that this is something that you're supposed to do, but you're not sure yet, what you can do is take one very, very small step and then just see if way opens, as the Quakers put it. For instance, if I were to want to seek another job, and I might start by composing a resume and showing it to a friend and getting their feedback on it, and that might give me the encouragement I needed or the sense of forward momentum that I needed to take maybe another small step.
And some of the stories you've collected in your book, such as Go to Camp David, have some remarkable small steps where someone who was resisting going to take a message back in the time when Nixon was president of sort of the Quaker concern for peace to the president himself ended up following turn left here, turn right here, and he felt that was God directing him to Camp David to deliver this message to one of the aides of the president. Some remarkable stories. We do have a caller I want to try to slip in. We're down to our last couple minutes, but go right ahead if you're quick.
Okay.
Line number one.
I just wanted to call and say how much I've enjoyed the show and how much I enjoyed the book. I enjoyed it so much that I gave it to the Books for Prisoners. And I'm sure that some prisoner is going to get a lot from it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the comment. The book being being discussed is Discovering God as Companion by Mary Ellen, and that's all one word, Gilpin, G-I-L-P-I-N. Mary Ellen, what last word would you have for our listeners, since we're in our last minute and a half or so? Any words about what you learned in this whole process of rereading some of these reports of contact with the divine?
I keep going back to the words that you quoted from the experience of the person who had first gone to a Quaker meeting not knowing what to expect. The person who spoke that morning said, prayer and scientific experimentation are the same in spirit, if not in concept. And that's the word that I would leave with people. Experiment with God. God is big enough to take an experiment, and you may get some surprising results.
And if people would like to visit a Quaker meeting here in Champaign-Urbana, what time is the gathering weekly?
It's at 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings at 1904 East Main, Urbana. After the first of the year, on January 13th, I think it is, we're moving our time of worship to 10:30. But come next Sunday and you'll be able to come at 11.
Very good. Well, we've been talking today on Keeping the Faith with Mary Ellen Gilpin, who is a writer as well as an editor, in this case, of a collection of stories of mystical experiences from Quakers around the country called Discovering God as Companion. Charlotte Green has also joined us in the studio. We appreciate her presence and untold prayer. So thank you. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week we'll be talking about Islam, and the topic is Dispelling the Myths of the Clash of Civilizations, Hatim Rahman and Ahmed Sharif will be our guests from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. On December 9th, our guest will be Emily Malloy and others from the Focus Group at Newman Center, the Roman Catholic campus ministry here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. December 16th, our guest will be at 5 o'clock that Sunday, Orville Vernon Burton, who is the author of the much acclaimed The Age of Lincoln, a book just out this year. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith, and we'll be on the air again next Sunday starting at 5 o'clock Central Time. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Imagine growing up in Pakistan. Islam is a way of life. Then you're 18 and you move to Iowa to attend college. That's the story Kumail Nanjiani tells in his one-man show, Unpronounceable. Also, India-born, Oscar-nominated filmmaker Meera Nair. I'm Jim Fleming. Join us next time for To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Mostly cloudy with a chance of rain in the afternoon. This is in the forecast for Champaign-Urbana and the area. The high around 42 and southerly winds up to 10 miles an hour. And it looks like a rainy evening tonight, but it won't be as cool with a low around 37 degrees. Easterly winds up to 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow morning, showers continue to come into the area. In the afternoon, rain may change into snow. The high around 42, north winds up to 15 miles an hour. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL comes in part from the Presbyterian Churches of Illinois and Indiana, celebrating the Bring Hope campaign worldwide and in your community. Information online at bringhopeworldwide.org.